Earlier this year, Governor DeWine signed House Bill 2 into law, creating the Ohio Broadband Expansion Program. Then, as part of the state's new biennial budget, $250 million were earmarked to allow internet service providers to apply for grants that will help fund the infrastructure needed to provide faster internet access to underserved rural Ohio communities. How soon will Ohioans see a difference in their broadband offerings, and what does that process look like? On this week's Our Ohio Weekly, we connect with experts to talk about rural broadband.
From the Ohio Farm Bureau Studio, this is Our Ohio Weekly, highlighting those who grow our food, fiber, and fuel, while examining issues that are important for farmers and their neighbors throughout the Buckeye State. Our Ohio Weekly is supported by Nationwide. Nationwide is on your side. Here's Our Ohio Weekly host, Ty Higgins.
An Ohio State University study found that 1 million Ohioans, nearly 12%, can't get high-speed internet or are underserved where they live. Only 61% of rural residents have access to broadband. Rural Ohioans' quality of life depends on technology, whether it be for education, business, healthcare, or technology on the farm. Our need for reliable internet access is critical. The Ohio Broadband Expansion Program is hoping to change that trend, but will it be enough? Joining us this week is Tom Reed, broadband consultant with Reed Consulting Group, and Jenna Reese, Director of State Policy with Ohio Farm Bureau. Welcome to you both.
Thank you. Glad to be
here. Thanks for having us, Ty.
So, Tom, I've been doing this a long time. I've never had a broadband consultant on. What does a broadband consultant do?
Well, boy, it's high time, Ty, that you have a broadband consultant. We're a large and influential group. No, broadband consulting really shouldn't exist because these issues that we're facing should have been addressed over the last 30 years. There was a universal service fund from the FCC that spent $100 billion since 1990 to solve this problem. And the money is missing in action. So the whole broadband consulting industry is based on the failure of past policy. So what we're trying to do is identify areas of need and where broadband does not exist. So many of the mapping solutions that have been pursued identify where broadband is. And what we've always focused on is where broadband is absent, because that's what we're trying to fix. And the shocking information that we've ended up revealing is that about half of the populated area of Ohio cannot even get speeds at 10 megabits down and 1 megabit up. So that's the lowest threshold that anybody wants to try to measure, is 10 megabits down, 1 megabit up, and half of the populated area of the state can't even get that. And we knew a lot of the problem was in southeastern Ohio, so we were not surprised that we found that a lot of the problem was in southeastern Ohio. Surprising us has been northwestern Ohio, where we thought the services were in much better shape. But it looks a lot like southeastern Ohio in terms of the lack of broadband availability. So the focus for us now that we've identified these areas is the really defining service areas, and then the matchmaking between ISPs that want to serve those areas, truly want to serve those areas, and the funding programs, because there's a lot of different funding programs out there.
ISP, I imagine, internet service provider, correct?
Correct.
Jenna, we have worked with Tom a time or two. He has been a great resource for some of our development of policy.
Absolutely. We had Tom come in last year for our state committee for policy development to influence our policy on broadband. We've always had, you know, policy supporting getting broadband extended to rural Ohioans, but that was pretty much it, because this isn't our specialty. We're not experts in this area. So we did have Tom come in to consult with our group as an expert to say, how can we get a little bit more specific with our policies?
What was it about his insights that prompted Ohio Farm Bureau? We've been working on broadband for years, but of course, we had many challenges in 2020. We'll talk about in a bit. But what were some of the insights he brought to the table that had our members thinking just how much more important this issue became?
Well, first of all, he came highly recommended. So when I reached out to the Ohio Broadband Office, Peter Voderberg immediately said that I should have Tom Reed come in based on his experience specifically in Southeast Ohio. I know that Northwest Ohio also struggles with this, but Tom can talk about, the infrastructure itself. We're really good with, hey, there's a funding need, but we can't really get down into the nuts and bolts of the issues, which is what Tom brought to the discussion.
Tom, you've worked with us, of course, but other partners across the state. What other organizations does your work involve?
So this started in Buckeye Hills Regional Council, which is a council of governments that covers 8 counties in southeastern Ohio. Pretty quickly, the other local development districts joined in. So now we represent about 34 counties in Ohio. Then also started working with Broadband Ohio, Innovate Ohio, and Ornet. So kind of taking on a statewide focus at that point.
One of the terms that I heard you use last year when you talked to our members about rural broadband in Ohio is digital desert. What is that?
The digital desert is where we project there just is no broadband. So all those areas, the half of the populated area of the state that's below 10-1, basically we're saying there's no broadband there at all. And this dates back to the problems with the copper cables. So, you know, we were very fortunate that way back in 1934, the U.S. Congress said that rural America needs to be on a level playing field with urban America in terms of telecommunications capabilities. So this is not a new goal. This is a goal that the country has had since 1934. And it's the only reason we ended up with telephone services in these rural areas. And the copper cables that were installed back in the 50s and 60s, they really have served us well. It gave us reliable telephone service for a long time, but they're way past end of life now. And in a lot of areas, regular landline telephone service doesn't work anymore. It's become very intermittent. So yeah, we don't have broadband. In a lot of places, even the telephone service is failing because that infrastructure has never been updated. And that's where we really end up with this digital desert, is where the only thing serving those areas is this old decrepit copper that's way past end of life. And there is no shortcut. We have to replace that infrastructure. And that's where we're just mystified that between 1990 and 2020, there was $100 billion from the FCC specifically to upgrade rural infrastructure that was spent with the telephone companies. And for the most part, it just did not have any impact.
One thing that really caught my attention during your presentation was just how expensive getting that infrastructure up to par would be. People don't think about those poles every couple hundred feet down the road and what it takes to get those up to snuff, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there is that issue of the pole infrastructure as well. Overall, we believe it's about a $3 billion subsidy problem in the state of Ohio. And that sounds like a huge number. People's heads explode when I say $3 billion. That's equivalent to building about 150 miles of highway. So you leave Columbus, you don't even reach either side of the state in 150 miles. So we've built a lot more highway than that. We can solve this too. It's similar to building a water system. They build a water main down a road, passing the homes, and then the homes pay to tap in. What we need is the subsidy to pass the homes with the fiber backbone. And then it becomes actually a profitable network after that, that the fees that the consumers pay once they've connected are enough to actually support the network and make it a profitable enterprise.
Talking rural broadband this week on Our Ohio Weekly, that's Tom Reed. He's a broadband consultant with Reed Consulting Group. And Jenna Reese also joins us. She's with Ohio Farm Bureau, our director of state policy. Jenna, how long has Farm Bureau had broadband as a priority issue?
The last several years, I believe potentially as long as I've been here. So I've been with Farm Bureau for 5 years. So I'll speak to that. For at least the last 5 years, it's been a priority issue. And we've really only for the first time gotten traction with it in a COVID or post-COVID world where everyone understands, yep, we get it. This problem is huge. And we were not prepared for a global pandemic because we didn't have half of our Ohioans connected to reliable, fast enough internet to support all the functions that needed to happen during the shutdown. So we have been working on this for about 5 years, but diligently due to interest for the last couple of years. So right now, I know that we've talked a lot about the rural broadband expansion program and the $250 million that the state just voted through the state budget for that program. Currently, they are working on the administrative rules through the Department of Development. And so we have been in contact with them to make sure that rural Ohioans' needs are met. A couple of things that we've noted are just, hey, how can residents ask questions about why their residential address is not included in a project area? Another is most of the notice, the public notice that we've seen, if not all of it, is online. And our question is, if 50% of Ohioans don't have access to the internet, and I know a lot of our members don't have email addresses, how are they supposed to find out about this? We need some type of publishing in a newspaper or something to make sure that that information is getting out to the rural residents who we are trying to connect to the internet.
Boy, Tom, there's still, I mean this with no pun, but there's still a disconnect between those that have and those that have not. There's just not that understanding that some people simply can't get online.
No, it is really difficult. It's about 720,000 households in Ohio that don't have access to even 25 megabits down, 3 megabits up. And we think a lot of those, there's just no availability at all. And, you know, those of us who have it, we do just assume that it's out there. And so, oh, we have an email distribution list, or we post information on a website, as Jenna's talking about. And it's not sufficient. Now, a lot of people do gain access through our excellent library system and the network that supports the library systems. And some people get access when they go into the office. Of course, a lot of offices were closed during the pandemic as well. When you talk about how old this problem is, I'll really date myself here. In 1994, I chaired a committee for the Public Utilities Commission of Ohio. And the subject was universal service. And we identified at that point that most rural Ohioans could not have 56 kilobit per second access on their modems. That was the common speed that was available. And already in 1994, the copper was not sufficient to support those modem speeds. So really, rural Ohio and most of rural America has been in a digital divide for the entire internet age. And the frustration levels in a lot of these areas, it's totally understandable why people are so frustrated with the broadband situation.
Jenna, this show airs in some major metropolitan areas where people didn't have to worry about getting online through the pandemic. What were some of the challenges that rural Ohio faced through the 2020 pandemic and early 2021 for that matter? What are some of the things, some of the stories you heard, some of the things that not having rural broadband caused?
Well, like Tom was saying, how there most people rely on other locations to get access to the internet, and they all shut down. Libraries, offices, McDonald's, everywhere that our members had typically used to get access had been cut off. So we have heard stories of families going to their cell company to try to buy more service, and they've used it up because parents are working and kids are all going to school. So that eats up the entire plan within a very short amount of time. Or I've heard of parents driving around with their cell phone trying to find enough service to submit an assignment for their kids. So it got pretty dicey during the pandemic. And I will say there are a couple of urban areas that also lack access to the internet. And I'm not sure if that's because it's a strict access issue or if it's more of an affordability challenge. But I do know that our urban counterparts in minor areas struggle throughout the state as well.
That's a really good point, Jenna. That's one of the things we discovered in our mapping. The analysis we did was based on this Ookla speed test intelligence data, where if you Google speed test, you almost always reach Ookla. It's commercial data that the state of Ohio licensed and gave us access to. And that gave us the surprise that while Northwestern Ohio is difficult too, but that also showed us that a lot of poor urban areas are also very poorly served.
Tom Reed, a broadband consultant with Reed Consulting Group, and Jenna Reese, Director of State Policy with Ohio Farm Bureau, continue the conversation about rural broadband after this on Our Ohio Weekly.
Today, farmers and small businesses with employees continue to search for health coverage options. Ohio Farm Bureau Health Benefits Plan has teamed up with Anthem to offer businesses with 1 to 50 employees an opportunity to participate in a large, self-funded pool backed by Anthem. This health benefits plan offers competitive rates through a self-funded arrangement, fixed and predictable monthly payments, and a variety of plan designs, including deductible with coinsurance and high deductible plans. The OFB Health Benefits Plan uses Anthem's Healthcare Provider Network, one of the largest provider networks in the state. Your benefits package can affect employee satisfaction. With the Ohio Farm Bureau Health Benefits Plan, you get access to Anthem's industry-leading specialty plans, vision, life, disability, and more, in addition to medical plans. Plus, they're integrated for even more value. Visit ofbhealthbenefitsplan.org for eligibility details and to receive your highly competitive quote today. That's ofbhealthbenefitsplan.org, a self-funded medical plan for Ohio Farm Bureau members.
Brad, Let me introduce you to one of the most important people in Peytonville.
Is she the mayor?
No, insurance agent.
She must be really good.
The best. That's why she chooses Nationwide to help protect all the families, businesses, and dreams in Peytonville. People really count on her.
Seems like she's a local celebrity.
She's a local legend.
Nationwide Mutual Insurance Company and Affiliates, Columbus, Ohio.
Today, it might seem that all news headlines impact you directly.
How will rural Ohio recover from a global pandemic?
A county eminent domain case heads to the Supreme Court.
Millions are still in need of reliable internet access.
The nation's food supply chain is being challenged.
For over 100 years, Ohio Farm Bureau has advocated for a strong Ohio food and farm community, and will continue to engage on issues important to you, because your growth is our future. Farm proud and farm strong by becoming an Ohio Farm Bureau member today by visiting ohiofarmbureau.org. As a farmer-owned cooperative, AgCredit knows a little extra capital can make a big difference in your operation, paying for new equipment, meeting unexpected expenses, and covering payroll. That's why they're returning $31 million to their borrower owners through their patronage program, lowering the cost of borrowing by 38%. What other lender does that? At AgCredit, they're proud to share profits with their members. Visit agcredit.net to learn more about how it pays to do business with AgCredit.
Case IH is a proud supporter of Ohio Farm Bureau, and thanks to a membership benefits partnership, Ohio Farm Bureau members receive a discount of up to $500 on every qualifying Case IH tractor and piece of equipment you purchase. This discount may be used with other promotions, rebates, or offers. So join Ohio Farm Bureau and pocket up to $500 in savings. Get your discount at OFBF.org. That's OFBF.org.
You're listening to Our Ohio Weekly. I'm Ty Higgins, and this week we're talking rural broadband with Tom Reed, a broadband consultant with Reed Consulting Group, and Jenna Reese, Director of State Policy with Ohio Farm Bureau. And Jenna, I mentioned earlier this hour about the Ohio Broadband Expansion Program. What does that entail?
So that is a program that was enacted by House Bill 2, which Ohio Farm Bureau was a major proponent of, but it created this program, and then the state budget passed a few months later and funded it at the $250 million that I referenced earlier. But basically, it creates cost sharing between the state and internet service providers to connect these areas, specifically residential areas, to internet access.
Tom, one of the biggest investments, if not the biggest, in Ohio as far as broadband is concerned. What are your thoughts on what's been done on that front as of late?
Well, Broadband Ohio and Peter Voderberg's group, they've just done a tremendous job with a very small staff of standing that program up in really record time. So the first cycle of applications for that program, the process will close on November 8th. And I expect they'll start awarding as fast as they can after that. There's a challenge process and things like that. But Broadband Ohio has moved very quickly to stand that program up. So we're excited about that opportunity. Then there's additional money at the federal level, you know, that infrastructure package that is winding its way through Congress. It's got about $42 billion for broadband. And we think the problem nationwide is about $130 billion. So 42 is not going to get us all the way there, but it's certainly a great start. The state of Ohio's commitment at $250 million. Again, it's not going to get us all the way to the finish line, but again, a really important commitment to solving this problem.
You mentioned, Tom, at the start of the show about the haves and have-nots. And for those listening, it might seem pretty cut and dry as to who has broadband access and who doesn't. But really, in your job and what you're seeing, it all depends on who creates the map. Talk about that a little bit and how there's more to meet the eye than who doesn't and who does have access to internet access.
Yeah, the mapping has been extremely controversial for years, that people have been criticizing the maps that the FCC publishes. I call the FCC process trust but never verify. So they just take whatever a carrier says, yep, that must be what is true. Despite the fact that advocacy groups have repeatedly shown that the data the carriers have submitted to the FCC is incorrect. And we've filed a number of files like briefs like that ourselves to the FCC, pointing out how bad their maps are. And so it was really a big breakthrough when Innovate Ohio decided to license this UCLA data, because the speed test data gives us ground truth. This is the experience of millions of consumers in Ohio with their broadband. We never had that before. So that is the big step for us, is being able to say, no, this is actually what's happening in Ohio. And this is a process that has been endorsed by the White House. So the White House with the NTIA, the National Telecommunications Information Administration, they released their own national map, and they also used speed test data in their mapping. So what we're doing is not at all an outlier. We say the problem is about four times worse than what the FCC says. Microsoft has their own methodology. They say the problem is 15 times worse than what the FCC says. So we're kind of in the sweet spot there in the middle of the road in terms of how bad we think the problem is. It's still very significant and much worse than what the FCC says.
To give our Ohio listeners an example of what Tom means by bad mapping, and totally correct me if I'm wrong, but for instance, a cell phone carrier would say, hey, here's our maps and here's all the areas we cover. And a lot of them are based on one person that they cover in one census block. And then the whole area is marked as covered. So that's what we're talking about when we're saying bad mapping.
Yeah, my poster child community for this is Amesville, Ohio. It's a small farming town in Athens, Ohio, a really charming place with a number of businesses that are still thriving there, trying to thrive without broadband. According to the maps, they have really good broadband services there. Everyone would expect that their landline telephones work. And according to the FCC maps, they have good mobile services, but they don't have any of that. There are no mobile signals that you can reach in Amesville. Even standing outside waving the phone in the air, you can get zero bars in Amesville. There is no broadband in Amesville. And they are constantly dealing with telephone outages where the landline telephones no longer work. So we're really taking these people back to the 1930s in terms of their technological capability for communications. And I don't think many people understand that there are a lot of places like this in America where there's just nothing now because the copper is decrepit. So even the old phone lines don't work. And it's really a problem we have to fix.
I want to talk about a couple of things as far as the social aspect of rural broadband, and we'll talk about healthcare in a bit. But Tom, I want to start with you and economics, not just the $250 million going to rural broadband, but what could happen if we get more small businesses online, get more smaller communities online? What would that mean for the economy of Ohio as a whole?
Well, there's a number of studies that show the economic impact of broadband. I look at the International Telecommunications Union. Every couple of years, they refresh their study of the impact of broadband. It's a tremendous impact. It would really pay for itself in increased tax revenues because we'll increase productivity, increase household income, lift a lot of people out of poverty. And as a result, you end up with more tax revenues. You can actually pay for all the investment required to solve this problem in about 7 years based on increased tax revenues, let alone the social and equity issues that we'd be addressing. So it's a tremendously positive picture. It's really a no-brainer in terms of investing public funds to make this happen.
And Jenna, you and I are on the front lines of mental health in agriculture, and it's so important that that telehealth aspect in rural Ohio has really come to light because of what happened over the last 18 months. Broadband's important for that as well.
Yeah, I think most people would say you can't substitute a true face-to-face connection with someone, but we are decades out in a lot of rural areas of having mental health professionals in offices in rural areas where our members can access them. So telehealth is the quickest way to address that gap. And yes, we have not been able to utilize it because of the lack of broadband resources.
More of our conversation about rural broadband later this hour on Our Ohio Weekly. This is Our Ohio Weekly. Welcome back. I'm Ty Higgins. It's time to feature someone who will always be one of our own. While Keith Stempert retired from the Ohio Farm Bureau, he will always be a friend and example for his leadership here, but also at the Ohio Soybean Council. Let's hear more from Mr. Stempert in this week's To the Beat of Agriculture.
Keith Stempert. We live in Worthington, Ohio, and I've had a 42-year career with the Ohio Farm Bureau Federation in several different capacities. I mean, I grew up in town, as I say, but, you know, I was thinking about maybe getting into law or getting into medicine or something like that. But with Dad and his influence and you know, kind of wanting to be of service to others, you know, and feeding a hungry population, kind of a pretty cool place to be in terms of helping others. And so ag kind of hit home. And Dad encouraged me, you know, telling me about the great people in agriculture that you'd work with and so on and so forth. So it just kind of came home. I went to a big ag school here in Ohio, Miami University. No, that's just kidding there. But I went to Miami and had a chance to study overseas. At the time, I was studying economics and international trade, and had occasion to kind of research the ag policy of the European Union. And, you know, I kind of came home from that saying, I'm going to turn this economics degree into agriculture economics and kind of worked on that. This is funny, but there was a time when I was a real little kid, maybe third grade or something like that, where I took a tomato plant and a potato plant. And I tried to splice them together to create a pomato or whatever you'd want to call it. And, you know, I looked that up one day, and indeed, there is such a plant. But my experiment didn't work. It failed miserably. But that goes way back. So that's the kind of thing, you know, that it's a part of my life. And so, yeah, it was probably always going to be the case that in some way, shape, or form, I touched agriculture, whether international trade or whatever. And along the way, maybe a minister or something kind of influenced me in terms of the old phrase, it's cliche, but blooming locally. And so this idea of working with farmers at that local level and with Farm Bureau and the county farm bureaus and all that, that's a real blessing, no doubt about it. The Ohio Soybean Association, at one point, about 1987, looking for a new leader, they asked me if I'd be interested in that position. And so I applied and got the job. And then did that largely as a contract arrangement with the Ohio Farm Bureau. In other words, I remained an employee for most of that time. There was a time where I wasn't, but I'm getting technical here, but for most of that time, I was an employee of the Ohio Farm Bureau, but the Ohio Soybean Association and Ohio Soybean Council had all my time for that. So I was kind of working for them as their executive. The volunteerism remains very, very strong. You know, these county farm bureau boards and organizations and all that they're doing. But man, has it changed. You know, we used to, in my first few years with Farm Bureau, we would gather 3 and 4 times a year for full day meetings, you know, at a vocational school or a church basement or something like that for full day training sessions with people in specific jobs. Like maybe they were leading the public affairs committee, or maybe they were in charge of communications and publicity for the organization. And those folks would come together and we'd have day-long training sessions. And, you know, 2-day, 3-day leadership conference training in Columbus in August. And, you know, volunteerism, while it's remaining very, very strong for Farm Bureau, I think people don't do that. You know, maybe you can get them together because of the way we communicate anymore, you know, on Zoom and social media and, you know, people texting, just a lot of information gets shared without a lot of travel. So, I mean, that's got its ups and downs in terms of, you know, we are a relationship organization, if I could say that. So getting together is still very, very important, but we get that information out and training happens in a different way. So that's been a huge transition, I think. You know, 42 years, I felt like I've had so many different wonderful experiences, worked with so many wonderful people. But, you know, there does come a time when you got to kind of let the next generation and let folks move, take over. And really great energy coming from the next generation of Farm Bureau leaders, Adam Sharp and his team and the board that's there. So, you know, we've completed 100 years of service and activity in the state of Ohio. And it's just time for a new group of leaders to take over. And I'm excited for this next chapter of my life. So we're enjoying our grandkids. They're all around us here in Central Ohio. So we get to see them a lot. Taking up a few hobbies. I enjoy golf, working on genealogy, our family genealogy, and some other things out there, trying to try to get more serious about wood carving and woodworking. So that's out there as well. So lots of good things. I'm enjoying it.
Thanks to Keith for sharing his story with us today. We here at Ohio Farm Bureau want to thank him once more for his work with us, along with his help to establish the Ohio Livestock Care Standards Board, and for his inauguration into the Ohio Ag Hall of Fame. This segment was produced by our friends at Wessler Media. If you'd like to preserve your own story, much like what you just heard, visit them at WesslerMedia.com, WesslerMedia.com. Back after this on Our Ohio Weekly. The 59th Annual Farm Science Review is coming up September 21st through 23rd at the Ohio State University Molly Caron Agricultural Center in London. Join Ohio Farm Bureau at the corner of Beef and Friday to visit about the organization's mission, programs, and current activities. Anyone who renews or purchases a new membership at Farm Science Review will receive a custom Ohio Farm Bureau hitch pin while supplies last. And be sure to grab your free apple and learn all about our member benefit partners at this year's Farm Science Review, September 21st through 23rd in London.
Here in Ohio, we grow possibilities. By investing in the Soybean Checkoff, farmers can concentrate on running their operations, while the Ohio Soybean Council creates new opportunities for future generations. The Soybean Checkoff works to get new soy-based products on the market, builds relationships with international buyers, and partners with researchers to increase yield and on-farm profitability. Learn more at soyohio.org/herewegrow. This message brought to you by Ohio Soybean Farmers and their checkoff.
Brad, let me introduce you to one of the most important people in Peytonville.
Is she the mayor?
No, insurance agent.
She must be really good.
The best. That's why she chooses Nationwide to help protect all the families, businesses, and dreams in Peytonville. People really count on her.
Seems like she's a local celebrity.
She's a local legend.
Nationwide Mutual Insurance Company and Affiliates, Columbus, Ohio.
Farm Bureau Bank has built its entire existence around the lifestyle and needs of farmers. They're here to help grow traditions, give back to agricultural communities, and offer financial convenience for your unique way of life. Visit farmbureau.bank or call one of their personal bankers today, 800-492-3276, to learn more. That's farmbureau.bank or 800-492-3276. From sunup to sundown, Farm Bureau Bank is committed to serving you. Welcome back to Our Ohio Weekly. I'm Ty Higgins, and this week Tom Reed joins us. He's a broadband consultant with Reed Consulting Group, and Jenna Reese is Director of State Policy with Ohio Farm Bureau, talking rural broadband. And Tom, you've noticed something pretty interesting in your studies over the past few years about broadband in rural parts of Ohio.
We talk about the disconnect between people who have broadband, people don't have broadband, they don't understand. There's another disconnect between urban dwellers and rural dwellers. And I've had a number of people who live in urban areas, and we're talking about how much money it's going to cost to solve this problem, going, well, why don't we just relocate them to towns where there is broadband? And you just kind of do a palm slap on your head, go, you know, farmers kind of need to be on the farm. We can't move them all into towns, and then the grocery stores are empty. And some people just, they don't even have an understanding of the supply chain. You know, they just go to Kroger's. And wow, look at all this produce and all this food. Like, yeah, that came from the farms, and those farmers need broadband and their children need broadband.
And that's something that we've directly been using as one of our reasons for supporting broadband, is that we are not seeing the next generation return to the farm because they don't have the access to jobs, healthcare, entertainment, all the things that we take for granted who have access to the internet. These areas that don't, nobody wants to return to these areas because they are stuck in, how Tom phrased it, the 1930s in a lot of places. So that's a huge challenge that we are facing as we're trying to get the next generation into agriculture.
Tom, what about other methods of connectivity? We see satellites flying over us at night. We've heard now of ideas of having rural broadband in airplanes as they fly over the homestead to get that connectivity for that period of time. Is broadband the end all be all?
Well, there's really no replacement for physical infrastructure. So I use the example of, well, the road washed out. Let's not repair the road. We'll just have everybody use ultralights. So we drive your ultralight until you get to some place that you can get to a road. It's not really an adequate answer. And people go, well, Tom, on ultralight's not similar. It's like, well, it is. It's constrained by weather. It's constrained by the terrain. And just like wireless internet services are, just like satellite internet services are. So things like Starlink, which Elon Musk's company, where they do the low Earth orbit satellite, it's going to be important. It's going to fill some niches. It's going to provide some competitive pressure. But in really bad weather, it's not going to work. In situations where you have even the slightest foliage between you and that satellite, it's not going to work. And terrain limitations in southeastern Ohio, you have to have a clear view of the northern sky. Well, in a lot of southeastern Ohio, you can't do that. So it's interesting. It's not a mass market solution that's going to solve our infrastructure problem. Wireless is just very constrained, again, by the technology itself, the frequencies that are available, the foliage, the weather. And then 5G, a lot of people say, oh, 5G is the answer. But 5G requires transmitters every few hundred feet. And those transmitters have to be connected to extremely high performance fiber networks. So you already have to build the fiber network to get 5G.
Jenna, when we talked about broadband and getting it through this new biennial budget, we talked a lot about not just reliable broadband. We also used the word affordable. And sometimes some of those other options aren't so affordable.
Correct. It's definitely a twofold issue. When we're addressing accessibility, that comes before affordability, because you have to have a product before you can get to an affordable product. So the conversation around this broadband program has been on the accessibility side. And the state legislature has said they would like to do more in the future regarding affordability.
Last question will go to both of you. Tom, I'll start with you. So what could a listener do to get involved with this issue if they feel so inclined?
Yeah, we've got connectingappalachia.org, a number of ways that people can feel more involved, of online survey, how to do a speed test so we can pick up their data the next time we get a monthly file of that speed test data, and kind of a articulation of a lot of these common sense solutions. So having a unified voice from rural Ohio that these issues matter and we don't want to leave any area behind, I think that's the best thing we can all do.
What's your short and long-term outlook for broadband?
I'm pretty bullish. I think the money that is coming through is going to be extremely helpful. The money coming through the infrastructure bill is going to go through the Department of Commerce instead of the FCC, which I think is a positive thing, because we need accountability and transparency on how this money is spent. Department of Commerce has a good track record on accountability and transparency. It's absolutely essential that we really spend this money wisely so that we solve the problem instead of, you know, it just disappearing again like the past $100 billion.
Jenna Reese, final thoughts?
Yeah, I think we've talked about, Ty, just that this, at least on the state level, is the largest investment we've ever seen in broadband from the state of Ohio. So I'm incredibly optimistic. We know it's going to take a lot of time, though. We try to set expectations for our members. Tom really did a great job of outlining a lot of those challenges and talking about how there's not one simple solution. It takes federal funding, state funding, private funding, partnerships on every level, communities engaging. So it's going to take some time, and there's not one answer to fix it all, but all of the combined total will get us there at the end, I believe.
I think so too.
That's Jenna Reese, Director of State Policy with Ohio Farm Bureau, and Tom Reed, Broadband Consultant with Reed Consulting Group. Thank you both so much for your time. Appreciate the insights.
Thank you, Ty.
Take care.
More Our Ohio Weekly after this. Many farm families like to plan ahead, but is there such a thing as too far ahead? Ryan Conklin is an attorney with Wright & Moore, and Ryan, the downfall of any and all plans is that they sit on a shelf and collect dust. Does that go for succession plans as well?
Yeah, it absolutely does go for succession plans, Ty. What we look for with clients, you might put plans together when they first have children, and then they sit there for about 10, 20 years. And think about 10, 20 years, that's a long time on a farm. That's a long time for major family events and major life events to happen.
How far ahead, though, is considered to be too far ahead for these plans?
Plans should be set up to accommodate the next 5 to 10 years. If you start looking too far in the future, it can really bog down the process. You can go down to, you know, a number of rabbit holes where you start planning for every possibility.
With that said, what types of changes in law or family circumstances call for a fresh look at a plan?
A good one right now, it's something that's pretty popular in Farm Bureau policy circles, is changes in tax law. That's a really good opportunity to pick up the phone or go into your attorney's office and talk to them about what changes need to be made in your plan. But as far as family circumstances, if you've got a son or daughter that decides to come back and take over the farm or start helping on the farm, And you've got other children that would be considered off-farm heirs. You know, now you need to look at that plan in the context of helping the farm survive. If you have a matriarch or patriarch that passes away, that can be very disruptive. Divorces might be another good example as well. But you know, ultimately, what we encourage clients to keep in mind is the goals that they set for their plan to begin with. And as those life changes come along, just making sure those goals are still worthwhile.
Ryan Conklin is an attorney with Wright & Moore. They focus their efforts on providing legal counsel to farmers and landowners in Ohio. Visit them online at ohiofarmlaw.com.
Ohio Farm Bureau has teamed up with Anthem Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Ohio to offer health insurance options typically reserved for larger employers to Ohio agribusinesses with 1 to 50 employees. The Ohio Farm Bureau Health Benefits Plan can provide you significant savings and quality health insurance benefits for your employees. For more information, eligibility, and competitive rates, visit ofbhealthbenefitsplan.org or call 800-937-4567.
Brad, let me introduce you to one of the most important people in Paytonville.
Is she the mayor?
No, insurance agent.
She must be really good.
The best. That's why she chooses Nationwide to help protect all the families, businesses, and dreams in Paytonville. People really count on her.
Seems like she's a local celebrity.
She's a local legend.
Nationwide Mutual Insurance Company and Affiliates, Columbus, Ohio.
With more than 300,000 horses in Ohio, the economic impact of the equine industry in the state is valued at $2.8 billion. Much of that value comes from the standard-bred horse owners, breeders, trainers, and drivers who participate in the sport of harness racing in the Buckeye State, all supported by the Ohio Harness Horsemen's Association. Since 1953, the mission of the OHHA is to preserve, protect, promote, and serve the entire standard-bred industry in Ohio and beyond. And the relationship between OHHA membership and Ohio's agriculture is undeniable. The farmers provide feed, bedding, and stables for the horses, and in turn those amazingly fast, four-legged athletes provide a major draw to Ohio's county fairs, bringing revenue to our rural communities. OHHA membership has its privileges. Members reap the benefits of having a strong voice for shaping statewide policies, receive continuous industry education, and valuable information in OHHA newsletters and magazines. Check out OHHA.com to find out how the Ohio Harness Horsemen's Association is making great strides for you. That's OHHA.com.
Thank you, as always, for making Our Ohio Weekly a part of your weekend. I'm Ty Higgins. The Hocking County Farm Bureau and Ohio State University College of Food, Agricultural, and Environmental Sciences Center for Cooperatives partner to create an innovative online experience for high school students to discover and explore careers in agricultural cooperatives. The Youth Cooperative Leadership Experience launched back in May, and to tell us more about it is Ivory Harlow, Organization Director for Hocking County Farm Bureau. Hi, Ivory.
Hi, Ty. How are you?
Doing great. So what is this program and why was it created?
The Youth Cooperative Leadership Experience was actually a pilot program that was an in-person experience in 2019. Back at that time, the Center for Cooperatives had started thinking about how to bring career opportunities to students, particularly students in the Appalachian region of Ohio. So the original program launched as an in-person experience, and the pilot was done with some Adams County FFA students. And it was such a successful program. These kids got to go visit cooperatives, hear from leaders in ag cooperatives and cooperative businesses, visit campus, and have a true eye-opening experience to careers in ag cooperatives. We had hoped to do an in-person experience with Hocking County students, similar to that pilot project, and then COVID hit. So we transformed the Youth Cooperative Leadership Experience into a virtual experience. And a great benefit of that is now we've reached beyond Hocking County. So this program is available to students all across Ohio, actually all across the United States, to discover and explore careers in agricultural cooperatives. The experience has videos, interactive activities, hands-on STEM learning activities like tomato plant grafting, and led by educators from Ohio State University. We have talks with leaders from cooperative businesses like Heritage, Nationwide Mutual Insurance. We visit Casa Nueva, which is a worker-owned cooperative restaurant in Athens, Ohio. So there's a handful of cooperative leaders from the food and ag industry that students get to interact with virtually and learn about careers and pathways to those careers.
Projects like this are no small task. They take time, they take money. How are resources gathered for this?
We were very lucky to receive funding from the Ohio Farm Bureau Foundation Youth Pathways Grant. And the purpose of that grant is for career exploration. We saw a great need, particularly in Appalachian, Ohio, where only 9.8% of residents between 25 and 64 obtain an associate's degree. A lot of the kids in this area are not exposed to education opportunities or career opportunities, but they have a connection to ag. And so revealing those pathways to careers, whether it's through education, through technical education, or through apprenticeship type opportunities in ag cooperatives, really is the missing piece to provide them with inspiration for their future. So we targeted the Appalachian counties when we created this program, knowing this kind of virtual experience is what they need to open their eyes to all of the opportunities available to them and fire them up about them, get them excited about what's available close to home in agriculture, which is something a lot of them are very interested in.
Did the virtual component give ag educators more of a part to play here?
The virtual aspect of this program really expanded the reach of the program. Now, ag educators from anywhere in the United States can take advantage of this program. Certainly anywhere in Ohio, it's free, open access available online for educators to use. Not only that, but because of the generosity of the Ohio Farm Bureau Foundation grant, we are able to provide supplies and workbooks to ag educators that would like to utilize this program, whether it's in person in their classroom or in their virtual curriculum throughout the school year. We're able to provide supplies and workbook supplement material free to any ag educator that contacts us. And how they can do that is available on the website, how they can get in touch with us to request those materials.
And what is that website?
The website is osu.edu/YCLE.
The Youth Cooperative Leadership Experience, Ivory Harlow, Organization Director for Hocking County Farm Bureau. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Also want to thank Tom Reed, a broadband consultant with Reed Consulting, and Jenna Reese, Director of State Policy with Ohio Farm Bureau, for a great conversation earlier this hour about the challenges we have with rural broadband across the Buckeye State.
Our Ohio Weekly is supported by Nationwide. Nationwide is on your side. And produced by Ohio Farm Bureau. Working together for Ohio farmers to advance agriculture and strengthen our communities. Be sure to visit Our Ohio Weekly's podcast page to listen to previous episodes at ofbf.org/Our Ohio Weekly.
And thank you, as always, for listening. I'm Ty Higgins. We'll see you down the road.